Yes, you are now listening to the sound of Sports Reports as Ordered. Friday night, we got playoff basketball. Thunder and Nuggets coming up. Pacers getting the beats by Dre right now.
Up to ass.
That's what it is. You know what I'm saying? And of course, I got with me, my comrade, the world-renowned, world-famous, born in Texas, raised in VA, representing everything New Jeruse. And
you're
all y'all to know that Jersey had to get it right. T-Net New Jersey, to be exact, the first public school system to voluntarily desegregate. Big Jersey, don't bring
your
back fight.
T-Net in the building.
He is Mr. Logical. And I am your unorthodox statistician going left so much you thought I was southpaw. The same way that some of these dudes would if they actually got in the ring. Live from the Alamo, I am 2-5.
Like, review, subscribe,
rate, share, do all the free things. Do all the good things with a liquid death in your hand. I got my soda sized here. You know what I mean? But look.
I poured in my Solutions Over Excuses mug, though. You know what I mean? Shout out to Andre.
So, Mr. Logical, I was talking all this trash, right? Just straight up.
Absolutely.
Cash. And I was like, yo, Celtics in 5. And then the Knicks won game 1. And I was like, you know what? Celtics in 5. And then the Celtics lost again. And then I was like, Celtics in 7. Mr. Logical, can the Knicks finish this off?
I want to refer to something I heard Shaq, Kenny, Ernie, and Chuck talk about after the game. It all depends on game 3.
Okay.
I know it sounds weird being up 2-0, but the Knicks statistically played their worst game of the 90 games or so they played this year in game 2. They won by a point.
Okay.
Once again, I don't like foul calls under 15 seconds. I get it. If it's part of the game, it's part of the game. It happens, whatever. But like they needed, you know, they don't get the foul call, then he doesn't get 2 free throws, and you still could lose that game. But the pressure is ironically on the Knicks. Because if they lose game 3, now I think the pressure is more on them because it's like you had the 2-0 lead. It shifts from Boston. You were the, you know, favorite. You're defending champs. That's already on the 2-0. So 2-0, everything they're saying to Boston is like, yo, you're defending champs. You lost 2 games at home. Your superstars are playing poorly. You guys are 25-for-100 from 3. I know I'm taking your stats, but if they go into New York, Midtown Manhattan, and they beat the Knicks in game 3, now the narrative is like, hey, you had the defending champs on the rope. You should have stepped on their neck. Now you're giving them breathing. And if they win game 3, or if they win game 4, now they're going back to Boston tied 2-2 with all the momentum. So even though the Knicks still show, hey, we could come back from being down 20 points, the pressure would switch back to them if they lose game 3. So I think the pressure is on the Knicks even more than Boston. Because if you get your ass kicked, you get your ass kicked. And people are like, well, you guys, they can point to things that say, well, you shot poorly, your stars didn't show up, your other stars has an illness, one of your role players off the bench rolled an ankle. What it, like, you can look at it after you get, if you get swept. Like, hey, these are the reasons you lost. But being up 2-0 and then blowing a 2-0 lead and then potentially have to go back, that's one of those things. Like, how did you let that happen? Because the series is still going on. So now I think that will weigh a little bit on the Knicks.
See, I watch too much basketball, and it's so confusing at the same time, right? Because at the end of game 2, I felt like Kobe Bryant. You know, they went down 0-2 to the Mavs back in 2011, the Dirk year, and they lost both those games at home. And they talked to Kobe about it, like, hey, you know, you lost these games at home. What's next? And then he goes, I guess that just means we got to win in 6. So then they lost game 3. And then he's like, I guess it's going to be a 7-game series. And then they got swept. You know what I'm saying? So then it took me back to the Knicks only because it's the Knicks. It took me back to 93. The Knicks had a 2-0 lead on the Bulls. And then they win another game in that series. And I got to feel. So, look, this is why I'm confused. So, you just brought up how the Knicks played their worst game of the year, basically.
Correct.
But at the same time, I could argue that Boston played awful in both games. You know what I mean? Like not even just from the fact that the three-pointers didn't fall, but just the whole, where's Jason Tatum? You know, like, even Jalen Brown, you know, he let them.
They're not playing smart. They're not playing. They're not. Like, even on that last drive, because I think I might either I text the group or I text you. They tried
to run the same play.
The thing was, he should have just taken the step back and lived with the results. And sometimes, I know we talk about this clutch gene. It's been one of these things that's been brought up recently in the debate of, you know, as different players and, like, who do you want to have the ball and take the last shot? I want the guy who looks to get to his spot. Like, I talk about this clip that Patrick Ewing was, when he was coaching Georgetown, he was talking to one of, or coaching, he was talking to one of his players. He's like, do you work on that shot? Have I ever seen you work on that shot? Well, Tatum, you work on that dribble to the free throw line, create space, step back. It's the same one that Halliburton took. Halliburton was looking at the clock. And he was like, I don't have time to pass this ball to look for another shot. But what I can do is get this guy on skates, because he doesn't want me to go by him. He wants me to shoot a jump shot. So I'm going to get this guy off of me, step back, shoot this three and live and die with the results. I think if Tatum would have just looked at it like, yo, you got Mitchell Robinson on you. And they're trying to say Mitchell Robinson did a good job. It was like, when they got to the free throw line and he was completely leaning like this, that step back, he can't recover. He can't recover without fouling you. So hit the stop, shoot the J, and just kind of live with the results. It would have been an open look, but he dribbled to Anunoby and Mikal Bridges, the two best defenders probably on the Knicks. So it just doesn't seem like they're not thinking basketball.
I always talk about how Jason Tatum shot 38% in the finals last year. You know what he's shooting in these two games right now?
I heard a number, and correct me if I'm wrong. I heard it's 29%.
Yep, 28.6 to be exact. Yep. And Jalen Brown ain't any better, you know, 34.9. But so this is my next question, right? Because I don't want to make excuses, because I told Oklahoma City there's no excuses. But, you know, I know Jalen Brown had the knee stuff going on. You know, yeah. We talked about Tatum's ankle the other day. So at what point does Joe Mazzulla change the offense? Because, you know, you want to get what you want to do, what got you there, right? Like, all these threes that aren't falling right now, that's how Boston buries you usually. So you don't want to change it too much. But this is what I tell them. You're Jason Tatum. You were talking about being the face of the league. You got commercials. A ref will give you a call. Go to the bucket. You will get more calls than you don't get.
I would just say, like I said before, like, I think after game one, between Tatum and Brown, the defensive matchup, Mikal Bridges might be 25 pounds lighter than Jalen Brown, if you had to guess realistically. He definitely, as far as like muscle mass, he's physically bigger than Mikal Bridges. So, yeah, he's a great defender. Take him to the cup, because that's where the pressure is. The jumper takes a lot of effort. I can do all kinds of stuff with my shoulders to bump you in the lane, pump fake, get you in the air, get a layup off. It's like Jason Tatum, Jalen Brown, you guys drive to the hoop. I want you guys driving, either shooting free throw line jumpers with your step back or drive to the rim. Once you guys start seeing the ball go through the hoop, then Derek White's going to feel like, when I get this pass, this is the best shot. Because a lot of times when teams play tight, like when a team doesn't score 100 points in the NBA game, it's because the star isn't getting the good looks that they want. So the role player doesn't shoot the shot, or the defense doesn't have to adjust to the hot starter. Like, if Jason Tatum starts like letting stuff off, Hart's going to have to come off his man and help out. Like if he's coming down lane and he's getting that dunk, or he's getting to these spots and he's getting the ball to Horford in a dunker spot, and Horford's, they're gonna have to adjust. But if they don't,
I feel like Boston's gonna come back and win this series, because that's the stuff that, because once, like, I don't believe that Boston's gonna shoot this bad the whole series. You know what I mean? All it takes is one game for the shots to start falling and for some of that stuff to open up that you're talking about.
Yeah. So as soon as they get into the paint, maybe whoever Jalen Brunson's guarding, maybe get him a foul early.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't hack Mitchell Robinson. Just let it go. Let him rebound.
Well, that was the thing I was going to bring up that I was telling you about, because Joe Mazzulla had me tight up in here. First of all, I hate the Celtics. I just hate New York more. But, you know, but it was one of those things where, you know, in the playoffs now, we saw Golden State do this. They were fouling Steven Adams, getting him on the free throw line. He misses. Then you got to take him out the game. So Mazzulla tried to do that to Mitchell Robinson. The only problem was Boston wasn't in the penalty yet. So you're just loading up fouls that he's not even shooting the free throws. So now you're in the penalty, putting Jalen Brunson on the free throw line.
That's what I mean. It's like you're overthinking it. And I know all these, and like I said, armchair quarterback, armchair head coach, armchair GM, we all do it. Sometimes I make an assessment and it's correct. Sometimes it's not.
Right.
But I can tell you that you won the championship last year. You have two really, really, really good wing players that you're paying over damn near $700 million to. Let them control the flow of the game so the role players can follow suit. New York's a big stage, but a lot of road players love going to Madison Square Garden and putting up numbers and putting on a show. Trey Young did it. Wow. Kobe loved it. You know, LeBron loves playing. Jordan definitely loved it. Reggie Miller. Like, people love going to that arena and putting on a show. So it's like, Mazzulla needs to be either playing clips of Reggie Miller in Jason Tatum and just sending them texts with these clips and just showing them, you know, telling them, you know, giving them Aristotle fucking quotes, whatever he needs. So he's like, listen, we are riding to dine with you. None of this cute stuff. Like, listen, if you got to take 29 shots, take 29. Just try to knock down 17 of them.
Yeah, so good news, bad news scenario, right? Good news, Boston had the best road record in the NBA this year. You know, bad news, Jason Tatum is 1-for-12 in the fourth quarter in these two games, and you're going up against Jalen Brunson, who is the first player since 1997 to score at least 83 fourth quarter points through the first eight games of two different playoff runs. So this ain't a fluke, because he did this last year too.
Yeah.
You know, and only Steph Curry and Kobe have done it besides him. So, yeah.
We got to give the Knicks their flowers too. So,
you got to give them their flowers. Mikal Bridges made the defensive plays in both games. In game one, he stole the inbound pass from Jalen Brown. Game two, he got the block. He didn't even score in game two until the fourth quarter and got 14 points in that fourth quarter. So that's the problem, right? Because the Knicks are playing, like, they're not playing well, but the Knicks are doing what they need to do when it matters. That's the difference, because if you're Boston, the Knicks are doing things that you did to other teams.
Yeah, the Knicks are playing basketball. They're just playing straight up, like, yo, I'm not scoring. Cool. Just play defense. Like, you can impact the game defensively, defensive rebounding, altering shots, making guys hold on. Like, Tatum had a good look to get the ball to Jalen Brown, but the way the defense rushed him, he couldn't take another dribble and get a bounce pass off, because I think he looked like, oh, I'm about to shoot this. And then both of those guys ran at him and he was like, oh, well, Jalen's over there. And then Mikal Bridges knocked it down. So that's your impact. And Jay Wright was talking about Jalen Brunson. He was like, Jalen Brunson, he said his first year at Villanova, he was behind another guy. And he said when he took over, he was like, I noticed that he is the guy that wants to lead. He wants that position. He wants that title. He wants that moment. Just because, not because he wants the limelight, he just wants people to follow him. Like, listen, I got you. Follow me. And I think Tibbs recognized that. Because he's like, because people talk about when he left Dallas. Him in Dallas, it was like him, Porzingis, and Luka. That's a good core, young mm-hmm. guys. Get some players around him. You could have been a really good key member on a championship contending team. But he was mm-hmm. like, I'm gonna go to the Knicks where every free agent has avoided, which also blows my mind. Like all these free agents that could have gone are like, I'm gonna go to Miami. I'm like, go to New York. Because if you do it in New York,
you are a legend.
Yeah. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. That's not like just a thing they say. Like it's a real, that's
the other thing.
Vibe from that city.
And that's the other thing. The Knicks as a team doesn't have a lot of postseason success. But if you just look at them, you know, Cat was in the Western Conference Finals last year. You know, Jalen Brunson made one with Luka. You know, you had Mikal Bridges played in the NBA Finals. OG Adonobi is a champion. You know, he was on that Toronto team with Kawhi Leonard. You know, so they have playoff experience, maybe just not collectively together. You know what I mean? So, and they're building that now, you know, but the other thing
is they got a team full of winners.
Right.
And if you go back to college, like I said, Villanova with the championships there.
Did you get a chance to look at that video I sent you about Porzingis earlier?
Mysterious illness.
According to Shams, he got a virus back in March. And since then, you know, it's been IV, hydrate, go to bed, all that kind of stuff. But he's still, I guess, feeling the effects from it. And they aren't able to identify what the virus is. So I'm like, you might just need to sit him down and quarantine him. But you know,
a little bigger than basketball.
Yeah, but I think Boston, I don't want to say they're fine because they're down 0-2. But I think that if you're Boston, and this is the problem, right? Because you keep telling yourself something until you believe it and it doesn't happen. So I'm sure if you're Boston, you're just sitting around saying, our shots just got to fall, which is very true. But what if they don't? Then what? You know what I mean?
11 for 11 on dunks.
Yeah. So
get to the rim.
Yeah. So then last night, I got the scare of all scares. You know, Anthony Edwards on the floor, holding his ankle. He had his face buried in his thigh. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be kind of entertaining. Like, Warriors without Steph, Wolves without Ant.
They're going to be on NBA TV.
Who's going to win this series, right? But then he just came back. Like, nothing ever happened. So as I was watching this game, you know, and I thought to myself before the game, I said, hey.
Those are 22-year-old ankles. That's why.
That's probably why. But I was like, hey, the Warriors can still win this series. You know, they can't. I'm not saying they will. The Warriors can still win this series because they got a guy by the name of Jimmy Butler. The problem with a guy named Jimmy Butler is you have to implore Jimmy Butler to take over the game. You have to tell him, Jimmy, it's okay to shoot now. Jimmy, it's okay to take more than 15 shots. Jimmy, just go do it. But, and the other thing is, you got a guy on your bench that you weren't playing a lot that will do those things. Jonathan Kuminga, you know what I'm saying? But now you just don't know because he doesn't have experience. So you don't know how that's going to look. So he could come out.
These boys are cooked without Steph.
Hold on. Wait. I'll tell you about cooked. My guy, Moses Moody. You know the last time he hit a shot?
Early April.
No, man. The last
time I thought it was going to be one of those astronomical dates. That's why I went with early April.
No, the last time Moses Moody hit a shot from the field was game 6 against Houston. So you had a whole game 7, a whole game 1, and now a whole game 2.
If you get the ball in your hand in the NBA, and I get it, and you know, we like I said, a lot of these former players are having podcasts and they're talking about how it goes and the hierarchy, who gets shots and who doesn't. If you're on the floor and you get the ball in your hand and there's 12 seconds on the shot clock, 14, take a look at the rim.
Right.
See what I got. See who switched on to me. Did the guy switch on Timmy have two fouls and we early in the second? He don't want to get his third. Is the backside guy defensively not paying attention? Can I get a couple of dribbles and maybe get to the rim? But I talked about it. Gary Payton the second. Like, he caught that lob at the rim and kicked it out for a three that was missed and then got the rebound and then somebody else made it. But it's like, that's why I said they're cooked. Because there's not a lot. There's not a – they don't have guys on their team that can flip the switch to, I've played basketball my whole life. I used to be a top scorer in high school. Now I'm in the NBA. Our top scorer is down. Let me flip that switch back on.
And that's what Kuminga should be. But, you know,
should be. But I don't think they didn't play him. It's my argument for every team. You got to play these guys throughout the year so that they're ready to perform for you in April, May, and June because you're working the hell out of the other guys. Dame Lillard, Trae Young, Jalen Brunson, Banchero, Tatum, Brown, Steph, LeBron, Luka, all these guys are getting as many shots as they want. They're on the floor as long as they want. They can make mistakes and not come out of the game. They are literally getting 36 to 39 minutes. Some guys even getting 40. And the green light is always on. Just zooming up and down the court, green light's on. I need to know if this dude we drafted can shoot. I need to know if this guy that's been on the team for a couple of years can run the second unit. And I feel like a lot of these coaches just rely on the star to use their star power to implement versions of their offense that the coach created. But really, it's just Ant Edwards is going to create shots for himself and space because he is a talented basketball player. Without him there, there's not a lot of the guys that are going to be able to fill that void, even if it's only 16 points where you're normally getting 26 to 27 from your starter. If that, there's not a lot of guys that can just create 16 points for themselves, and that's why I think the Golden State Warriors are cooked.
Yeah, and I think that, but like I said, I think that's where Jimmy Butler comes in. Because, I mean, we saw him take teams that were on par with this Golden State team without Steph, you know, to the finals, even though, granted, it was in the East, you know. And I was telling somebody today, because they were like, man, you remember Jimmy Butler in the bubble? Bro, that was 5 years ago.
That was 5 years ago.
That was five years ago.
He was exhausted after those triple doubles.
That Jimmy is
left. Series went six. They won two games, and after each of those two games, he looked like he had just ran a marathon.
But I think that Steve Kerr last night was just playing around a little bit, like just throwing lineups out there to see what would stick. I expect to see a little bit more of a concerned effort tomorrow back at the Bay. You know, the role players that you always talk about, they're at home now. So I think these games are going to be closer than and Golden State's defense has been lights out. I mean, against Houston, granted, Houston, we talked about how Houston needs to get the shooters and everything. But they held Houston in the 80s a couple times. They held Minnesota in the 80s in game one. So, like, I'm not saying that they can win the series, but I think they can win another game.
Because yeah, but Golden State's defense in Houston turned to offense with Steph Curry on the floor. They're right. Going to be able to play great defense, but when Buddy Hield misses a three and it's a long rebound and Draymond has to chase down whoever got the long rebound for the layup and then they get it out the net and you can kick it to Steph and Steph can come down and take your two and let me get three, get it out the net.
Minnesota,
no one's down there to get it out the net. Like, no one's out there to get you that three.
You could trap Minnesota into a game of who takes the stupidest shots, and they will play along with you. So that's why I feel like Golden State will have chances to sneak up late and, you know, steal games late, maybe. But, you know, I think that they're done.
The problem is, like I said, the problem is I don't think they have a guy that's going to be able to create. Buddy Hill's going to get open looks as long as he doesn't dribble. I think he has a crazy percentage. Like, if he doesn't dribble, like, the percentage of him making these corner threes is astronomical. But if he takes
as long as they split, as long as 12%. As long as they split at home, I think they could be okay because they're saying Steph will be back in a week or so. So I got
them losing both at home. Steph comes back early in game five.
He better not.
You can't go without him. Like, you're gonna have to put him in a hyperbaric chamber or something.
If they do win one, there's about a 4-day break in between games five and six. So as long as you can get one of those wins at, you know, make it a 2-2 series, you get the sixth game. So you just got to somehow get to game six, and then we'll see where Steph is at that point in time.
Yeah.
You know, but then, whew, over in the Sooner State, what happened to Denver the other night is what I thought was going to happen in game one.
The Knicks.
I thought OKC was going to do that to Denver in game one. So if you're OKC, you're really kicking yourself for blowing game one.
Well, same thing.
Good evening.
Good evening, ma'am. OKC is now back on track. Because you were asking, like, what was OKC, Cleveland, and Boston, what were they doing while they were waiting for their second round opponents? Maybe they weren't hyper-focused. Maybe they were just kind of going through the motions and figured, like, you know what? We're a good team. Let's not stress too much. Let's just, you know, play our game. And then they came out and, you know, they gave away a game. You know, Chet hits a couple of free throws and, you know, it's a different story. But you get that ass whooping out of the way and now you regroup. And then you go out there and you put good stuff on film. And now going back to Denver, you think as long as they can handle the altitude, because like we talked about that 5,200 feet is very different. Cause we were at a hill. Hill was like 4,800 feet maybe. And me and you went to Colorado. Colorado Springs was like 6,200 to 6,600. It's ridiculous. I felt like my whole face was dried up. I couldn't breathe. But these guys are well-conditioned 20-year-old athletes. So as long as that doesn't get to them, you could just apply the same things you did in game two, in the game three, and you also have film on what you did poorly in game one. So like you have your what you did poorly, what you did well. And I think if you can perform with that, like with Boston, we don't know what they did well. They just know they could have scraped it out, but they didn't because they didn't make clutch time plays.
Yeah, because I mean, even with all that stuff, like, yeah, we talked about Boston, they lost by a combined 4 points.
Yeah, they go 28 for 100 from three and they win both games.
Right. And you know, so when I was watching OKC the other night, you know, I was just like, man, I haven't seen basketball like this since Nolan Richardson 40 minutes of hell at Arkansas. Like they look like a college team out there just getting up and down the court. And I think Denver just isn't deep enough, or not that they're not deep enough. They just don't play enough players to withstand what OKC is going to throw at you.
8 versus 10 and you're in the 10, they're all under 26.
Yeah. And that's the problem, right? Because let's just say Jokic is having a bad game. You're like, okay, Jamal Murray can step up. Okay. Jamal Murray's having a bad game. Maybe Russ, because you know he's been playing well, Russ can step up. But then, like, if they're just having one of those nights where nobody has it, there's no other person to step up. Michael Porter ain't doing it. Christian Brown's only going to score off a transition or very wide open threes.
Yeah.
You know, they don't play my guy Strother. You know, he played well the other night in the cleanup time. You know, Peyton Watson, sometimes you see him, now you don't. He's like Waldo, basically. Then you got Pickett, who I haven't really seen a lot. So I think that Denver just doesn't have enough bodies to withstand what OKC is going to – the onslaught,
once
if
again,
you will.
Like when we talked – you've talked about it all year. You've been talking about the guys you wanted to see play, and Mike Malone didn't play him, and now this new coach doesn't play him. So it probably wasn't the coaching. I think it just was a personality conflict that caused that breakup.
Well, this dude is trying to get a job. He ain't trying to play these guys and play with fate.
I mean, what else are you going to do? Because if you don't get it done, they're going to be like, well, you know, you're an interim coach for a reason. But if you actually say, you know what, this is my philosophy. Because right now he's coaching Michael Malone's philosophy that just got fired. So right. It's like, what is your stamp on this? Like, where's the you know, the Adelman family offensive scheme? Like, what are you implementing in Denver? Or are you just riding with the game plan from March before, you know, Malone got fired? But yeah, basketball is a tough sport, and it's a young man's sport, especially when you have a young star. When you have young stars and you have young players that are also very versatile, like I said, everybody knows their role. And everybody, you know, had the loss, and I was like, okay, cool. Let's if we do our thing at home in front of our fans, we've been a team that stuck together all year long. The group interviews, hell, three of them in multiple commercials together. I think Chet, SGA, and that other guy, Williams, he's in an AT&T commercial. So now they're all getting deals. It's just a very cohesive unit. And Denver is just a gritty team that's gone through a lot. Russ, we talked about, you know, the other day, like if you wanted to beat any one of his three players from the original OKC, you know, crew, Russ is one of those guys. But there is a ceiling on what you – it's a ceiling on what you can get out of grit.
Yeah, if this was Russ 5 years ago, OKC might be in trouble, you know. But as I look at this, right, you remember back in the day, we used to argue all the time. I used to call you all the time, and I'm like, back in game four, those refs gave Cleveland that game. They gave Steph three fouls. He fouled out, you know. So they scored 86 points in the first half in that game. OKC just broke that and scored 87 the other night against Denver. So OKC was not playing around, but I just want to know, are people happy now? Because people kept saying, this team is inexperienced. I want to see them face adversity. How are they going to react the first time something goes wrong? Well, they done showed you. You know what they did? You know what OKC did? OKC did the equivalent of punching somebody in the face and he'd say, that ain't do nothing but make my dick hard. That's what OKC did the other night to Denver.
I mean, there's a collection of words we could have used there, but I like that one. We'll go with it.
That's what they did there. So I don't know. I'm going to give Denver another game in this series, but I'm not so sure they get another one. Because, I mean, the one that they did get, it took 42 and 22 from Jokic. You know, It took Aaron Gordon to hit a three at the buzzer. Or not at the buzzer, but you know. But then it took. Yeah. But then it also took for Mark Dagenau to foul with up
to
three.
To get Jokic back in the game.
Right, to get Jokic back. So it's one of those situations. I don't want to be
butterfly effect. A butterfly flaps his wings and, you know, the wind on the other side of the world changes. Yeah, you could have made all those moves. But I think just the youth and the energy, it gives OKC their edge. And then the playmaking ability from multiple positions gives them another edge. Jamal Murray is great. Playoff Jamal Murray, but everything goes to Jokic, and I think you can game plan for that in these kind of series.
See, and I don't want to be arrogant, but I feel like OKC is at that point where it's like we're playing against ourselves. You know what I mean? Like the only thing that can stop us is us. That's where I think OKC
is. And they're probably looking across the aisle like, Cleveland's in trouble in the East.
Yeah, Boston, that keeps you trouble on tap, in the right? East. You can't take it's it like, lightly.
We can get out of here, and you get a young Minnesota with one star, but he makes his plays from the outside. So if you get through Denver with their big star, their superstar, now you just got to switch that defense to playing it to the outside. So now you're in the Western Conference Finals against Minnesota, a young, gritty team with a young superstar, or somehow Golden State pulls off the upset. I guess it would be an upset. Yeah, pulls off the upset.
You're playing against the old men.
And then you're playing against old men with one ultra-dynamic superstar and then a bunch of gritty guys. So I think the OKC, you take care of business in game three, and you're on, you know, the proverbial easy street at this point. It could be potentially for the remainder of the playoffs,
right?
I've always thought they were the best team in the NBA anyway. But if you don't have to compete, if you might go into the NBA finals playing against Indiana or the Knicks, if the one or two seeds get knocked out, I like my chances there from OKC.
And you know, and that's the other thing, right? Like if I'm OKC, why not, you know, just aim to get this series over as quick as you can? Because like the more you let somebody like Jokic stick around, as we saw in game one, he will get you. But Jokic has been looking wild lately. Like he's been like damn near, to me at least, look like he on the verge of sumo wrestling somebody. Like he's just frustrated because, you know, like I know he's looking at Michael Porter Jr. Like, why are you here? Like, you know, like he's Baca. Yeah. You got a weird case. Why are you around? You know, and at this point, like, I don't know who else, because Russ can score, like he can get through the lane, you know, it gets you some layups and everything, but he'll shoot you out as quick as he'll shoot you in.
Yeah. Russ's aggressiveness takes away from what Jokic provides. Like, cause he's not known to be a spot up shooter. And Jokic likes to kick the ball out from the paint to the shooters. Russ likes to drive the ball in. So if you kick it, if Russ is on the wing and he drives and, you know, he gets that little crazy over the head pass out to Russ, he's expecting the shot to go up, turn, look for the rebound. But Russ is like, pump fake, I want to dribble drive and get to the paint and create something at the rim. And it's like, man, it's three people down here already trying to watch Jokic. You just dribbled into him.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, and then, of course, the Pacers are getting the smackdown, you know, 126 to 104. So we got OKC and Denver coming up, you know. So the Pacers are up 2-1 now. You know, the Cavs got their guys back. You know, Mobley's back, Hunter's back, Garland's back. You know, they got one tonight, but we'll have to see if they can sustain it. You know,
we'll see. 43 points.
Playoff Donovan. Like, you know what I mean?
Indiana, I know Donovan Mitchell is special. You know, he normally goes for about 24 to 26 points in a regular season. Not a big regular season guy. But he has that switch that he turns on in these prime moments that some players do. And I believe it's been studied by like sports psychologists and stuff like that. Like, some people just have it. You can see it with Olympians. You can see it. We talked about Patrick Mahomes, Bolt, because Usain Bolt, in between all these Olympic gold medals and 100 to 200 and 4x100, he was losing like world championship races and like little invitationals and stuff like that. And guys were getting a lot of confidence, and he would just get to the Olympics and he's jogging through the finish line. It's like something else. Like, he has another gear. And I think Donovan Mitchell has that. It's just that you give away too many games. But like I said, now the pressure's on Indiana. The same way it is with the Knicks. It's like, yo, you can't go back to Cleveland down, you know, tie 2-2.
Right.
You got to go back 3-1.
You know what's crazy is Donovan Mitchell is seventh all time in playoffs points per game. That's nuts to me. But what's even crazier than that, because we always talk about the assists, we always talk about the rebounds. Jokic at number 9 is surprising as hell, too. You know,
points per game.
Playoff points per game, yeah. But Donovan Mitchell, you know,
I think him being 9,
what up, Mike?
Crazier than 7. Like, because I didn't think Donovan Mitchell would be that high. I figured Jokic would be high. I think Luka's in like the top 4. Or
also,
like
real quick, I'll give it to you real quick. Pause. Top 10, real quick. Starting at 10, going to 1. Rick Barry, Jokic, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, LeBron James, Jerry West, Kevin Durant, Allen Iverson, Luka Doncic, Michael Jordan.
That's a hell of a list.
That's a hell of a list. You know, Luka and Mike are the only ones over 30. So, you know, but look, man, I'm still riding with the Pacers, of course. You know, Cleveland was excited. They got their players back tonight. I don't expect them to continue this. You know, even though you could argue they were up by 20 in the last game and, you know, Tyrese Halliburton had to come through and crush the buildings. So, yeah. You know, here we are, you know, game 4 coming up on Sunday.
This might be the series that, you know, how we talk about we being sports fans, like, man, I'm not watching Milwaukee and Phoenix. This might be the series that's the most entertaining of this round. I think Knicks Boston is, you know, obviously the names are going to ring
bell. Entertaining, but a lot of it is the names as well.
But if the Knicks pull off game 3, then it's going to be some excitement. But
body bag.
But if Cleveland pulls off game 4,
you know what would be so Nick for them to win game 3 in Boston, become the first team to come back from 3-0. They almost did it a few years ago, you know, if Jason Tatum
hurt. Tatum's rolled his ankle 2 years ago. Yeah, they're playing against Denver in the NBA Finals. I like it. Like I said, I like it. You might be right with the Indiana thing. I know you picked it. before we even picked our first round playoff series. Like, I thought Cleveland was going to lose in the second round. I didn't know who, but I just felt like they weren't going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals because I just felt like their role play. I felt like they were like Diet Boston, but Donovan Mitchell is proving me wrong.
You're lucky that Donovan Mitchell ain't 6'5", 6'6". That's all I'll say it like that. If he was 6'5", 6'6",
if he was Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum size, yeah, he would be.
Yeah. He might be a top.
In those rumors about guys going to LA, you know how all those all top players end up in rumors of going to LA.
Hey, Giannis trying to go to LA.
Yeah, right.
Hey, that's what the reports say. LA, Giannis New York, Miami.
Perfectly in Texas. I'm gonna put $100 on the Spurs just because they're plus 1200.
Oh man, I would love that. You know what I'm saying? But yo, I got some questions, right? I want to know the answers to these questions. Was Charles Oakley an angry black man? You know, was Xavier McDaniel, Rick Mahorn, Charles Barkley angry black men? Was Allen Iverson an angry black man? Was Steve Francis an angry black man? Because apparently Draymond is.
This is a two-part kind of outlook that I have on this. And I was thinking about that. Like, I didn't want to, like, take any notes or anything like that. I understand Draymond not wanting to be pegged as the angry black man because it does kind of cheapen his personal accomplishments. I don't think you're on the basketball court, you know, I wouldn't say antics, but your persona on the basketball court shouldn't dictate how people feel about you, even though you shouldn't have to give a damn anyway. But
we listen to him talk besides basketball courts.
Yeah, and he's a very calm demeanor. Like, you know, people thought he was.
You saw what he did to Kitty Cat.
Yeah, but he apologized. But like I said, everyone thought he had like this beef with LeBron, and then we found out through like the Barbershop podcast.
He's been sucking LeBron off for years.
That they are, you know, they're cordial. He has his podcast. His podcast is signed to Colin Cowherd's network, who's a prominent media member, and he has a good, smart podcast, very calm. I mean, he talks a lot of shit, but he's like, so I think from his perspective, it's like, listen, don't diminish my character as a man, as a person, because I get ratchet on this basketball court. Like, yes, he's a nut on the basketball court. He cannot defend his antics on the court. Because he does it deliberately. He calls on when he's getting technicals. He calls on the fans. He goes after guys. He tackled someone from the Clippers like a football tackle. So it's like you do this stuff on the floor. You stepped on Sabonis, even though
that's where most people see him. So that's what they're going to take away from it. And you know, like I think it was the Boondocks. You know, Gangstalicious, and that when he first came on the scene and he was running from his ex or whatever it was, and he was like, he got a chemical imbalance. That's Draymond. He got a fucking chemical imbalance, you know, because, you know, it's one of those things, right? Is that, look, we like passion. You know, we like to see the confrontations. Like this playoffs, the reason why I think this playoffs has been so much better than past years is because the refs are letting them play more. But the difference is like, okay, you went up for a basket. I went to block your shot. I knocked you down. You got up in my face because you felt a way about how hard I hit you or something. Understandable. Draymond be karate kicking people. He be kicking people in the nuts.
Yeah, but I don't think it's an anger thing. I think
it's not an anger thing. But I'm just saying, once you act like that, you don't get how they should feel about you. Like even last night, he went up for the little, you know, whatever he was doing and hit Naz Reid in the face. And it's like, why are you the only person that this happens to? Like Trae Young and Jalen Brunson, they do that punk ass move that I don't like where they pump fake and then they jump into you, but they don't be doing all that and trying to grab people's arms and pushing you when you're in the air, you know, like all this kind of like, it's nonsense, right? You know what I'm saying? Like there, if you're going to play like that, you got to own it. Like Ron Artest, since Mike brought him up, when you talk to Ron Artest about some of this stuff, Ron Artest tell you straight up like, yo, I'm from the hood and I seen my man get stabbed in the chest with a table leg. You know what I'm saying? So he's just built like that. This is where I come from. This is how Draymond's on some, Like, yeah, I'm going to be a douchebag on the court, put a dude in the sleeper hold, not let go when he's tapping out. But then I don't want y'all to think that I'm crazy or nothing, though.
Yeah, and that, but that same sense, as a member of the media that he is and as we are, he has to understand, like, listen, you are giving them enough information to frame that narrative. Uh-huh. It's not like they're searching for it. But devil's advocate, you, from a personal standpoint, I can see the way he reacts. Like, listen, don't try to paint me this way because the way I play on the basketball court. But in the same sense, dog, you have to understand, like, you are drawing some of this stuff for you. Like, you're uh-huh. playing Pictionary and you're drawing this stuff up and people are just making their guesses and they're launching their opinions because you are giving them some of that information.
You got fucking game in the NBA Finals.
He slapped LeBron on the back of the thigh. Yes.
But that's LeBron. Was... You can't do that. You can kick Steven Adams in the nuts all you want. You can't touch LeBron.
But once again, like that just was part of the narrative. It's like, yo, I looked at it like this. It's like when you're a habitual line stepper, it's like, at what point do you say, all right, where's my accountability for this? I'm not sure about his technical fouls that he's gotten this year. I know normally he's pretty high up and he normally misses a game.
Away from a suspension. I think
he's always close to that line, but uh-huh. Anthony Edwards the same way. I believe Luka is probably pretty close. If not, he should be. But at least he's not getting the narrative that he's a crybaby, because that's what they say about Luke. He's always crying for a foul. They say the same thing about Trae Young, always baiting for a foul. They call LeBron a crybaby. So I'd rather have people think that I was angry and them act accordingly.
I'm pretty sure every ref that has ever called a Draymond Green NBA game has had dreams about bitch slapping him for the way that he talks to them.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what the NBA can do because, I mean, you can't just keep.
Steve Kerr can. You remember the game against OKC? If I remember correctly, I think it was the night that Steph hit that long shot to win the game, like the one that's on the commercials and everything. I think it was that game. Draymond was like screaming at Steve Kerr, had to be held back. And like at halftime, like that's why I remember when we first started Sports Reports is Ordered. One of my questions and jokes I used to always say is like, yo, you ever think Draymond beat up Steve Kerr before? I was serious. Like, it was a joke, but it was dead serious.
Honestly, if I'm Jaylen Brown, maybe not Jaylen Brown, let's go. Who's about to get some money?
Kuminga?
I'm Zion Williamson. Zion got a nice little check. You got a young guy, second year guy, and they're playing the four, playing the five, and he has to deal with Draymond at some point. And he's like, listen, man, if this dude doesn't stop slapping you in the face on accident and you punch him, I'll pay your fine. I'll take care of you because I need you to let him know that you not standing up for this shit. And the only thing that's holding people back really is the fine. Because I don't think Draymond, I know he's like 6'6", probably like 220, 230, so 6'7". He's probably, but I'm like, yo, if you're in the NBA, you work out just as much as he do. You're probably just as big as him. If not, you got a hitter on the team. That's
what you're going to do. Yeah, you got to him first because we saw what happened when he hit Jordan Poole. But you're absolutely right. Although he like you got to protect your brand, like especially like you keep saying, like he's a member of the media. So, you know, there's a certain decorum that you have to carry yourself with. Now, when you're on the court, you're in a zone, right? Like, you know what I mean? Just like football players. I'm sure that there's dudes that we see on Sundays that are like biting people at the bottom of the pile that probably go to church every week. You know what I mean? But the difference is,
my son was nice because I never know, but he showed me a video clip of him mushing some kid. He's like, yeah, my hand all in his face in a pile. I'm like, you psycho. Good job.
It happens. You know what I'm saying? But the difference is they're wearing helmets and you can't always see in those piles. So there's stuff that they can do to get away with. Draymond is so demonstrative and over the top. Like I remember LeBron, they were playing the Pacers in the playoffs and they called a foul on LeBron that he didn't like. He literally ran from one end of the court to the other end of the court and got a tech and was like surprised that he got a tech. And it's like, yo, you're not even being disrespectful. You're just being stupid right now. And that's yeah, and that's what a lot of
Draymond. And that's what Draymond makes his text worth it.
Right. And he's also the same way that he's frustrated because he feels that there's this narrative about him. He's also fortunate because I'm sure they could call more flagrant fouls on him than they do. I'm sure they could call more texts on him than they do. But then if they do that, you're going to have people like Mr. Logical coming on here talking about they didn't come to the game to see the refs. You don't kick the stars out the game.
Listen, I don't like flagrant fouls from as a defensive move. I don't think – I think because we talk about the 90s stuff, like, oh, it's so physical. I'm like, yeah, those were still fouls. They were just hitting dudes excessively hard for a basketball game. It's not football. They were just hitting them hard. So I think guys getting flagrants, if you deserve it, you deserve it. The thing that Draymond does, and he like say, I credit Nick Wright for this, but he's like, Draymond will get that first tech early in the game, knowing that the refs don't want to be part of the story in the post game if the Golden State Warriors lose, so they don't kick him out. He deserved a lot more games where he earned two techs. Because yeah, he'll do the same. He does the same thing to get his first tech for the rest of the game. So it's like you're doing this to yourself. And like, I don't know if people are really labeling him as an angry black man. I don't know where that came from. No, I don't know if he was frustrating, not wanting to answer questions.
It's just him not taking accountability.
Yeah. So like I said, I don't think anyone's trying to peg him that way because. Pause. Because he's on TV, he does have his podcast. He does, and he's doing it while he's an active player. It's not like he had to retire and rebuild his image,
right?
And then become one. Like you're doing it now, so people respect your basketball acumen. It's just that sometimes you do nut shit on the basketball floor, right. And you got to chill out. But if people are trying to shape his narratives and he's angry and then adding his personal life into that story based off of, then that, okay, that's bogus.
Now, Kobe got in trouble too. He called that referee the gay slur. You know, yeah. You know, I don't know nothing about no Tyler Perry movies though. So, you know, you're going to have to explain that one to me later. But it's just one of those things where, you know, just own up and be the goon. If that's what you want to do, be the goon. But I was actually wondering, you know, these last couple of games, like game 7, you know, he went off a little bit, like by his standards. Game 1, he came out pretty good. How good could Draymond be if he was actually looking to score?
Well, that's the thing. That early wave, that early Clay, Steph, Bogut, Iguodala, that early Harrison Barnes, he was shooting a lot of threes. People forget that game 7.
32-15.
Yeah, he went 32-15, and he was doing it the whole game. Like, he was going toe-to-toe with Bron.
Could he have won finals MVP even though he got suspended?
Nah, just because he got suspended. I think that would have been Steph. I don't know what the stats were, but Steph would have had to have had a better game 7 than he did because I don't think he had a great one. I think he had a bad turnover.
Yeah, that was the one that I knew the game was over with about 4 minutes left. Yeah, because nobody was even scoring at that point, and
Draymond's so open. Yeah, Draymond is left so open that, like you're saying, you're hoping that Golden State can push it to Game 6 and get Steph back. If they're gonna sag off of him, you got to knock down the three because it's just a warm up three for you at that point. If no defender is gonna close out on you,
right? So it is what it is, you know. Like Draymond, do better. You know what I'm saying? So then, of course, we heard rumors around draft night, and now it is so. The Dallas Cowboys have a new wide receiver. You know, now, if it's one thing that Dallas knows, it's diva wide receivers. You know, T.O., Dez Bryant, the list goes on. Michael Irvin. And now they got George Pickens. You know, they got him for a third-round pick and I guess some pick swaps, you know. Yeah. So my first thought when I saw this was Mike Tomlin strikes again. You know what I mean? Because you know, all these years, right? we've been having these conversations, not just me and you, but just in general, having these conversations, and everybody's like, the Steelers don't never do nothing to help Mike Tomlin out. And I'm like, hey, Mike Tomlin is Mike Tomlin. He's been there for about 18 years now. You don't think he's got some kind of say in this? So then the reports came out, you know, Mike Tomlin led this whole thing to get George Pickens out of there, basically. So it's like, so which is it? The Steelers not giving him talent? Or can I finally rightfully say that this shit lays at his feet?
Well, I mean, they could have traded him for an extra third round pick in this draft, potentially from Dallas, and probably taken Shador before Cleveland took Dylan Gabriel and Shador. Uh-huh. But that's neither here nor there. I don't know what the agent, you know, I don't know what the contract details were as far as that deal made. I like the move for Dallas. I've been reading on some social media, people just, you know, slamming the move. But for me, George Pickens was Mike Tomlin's angry Obama voice. Because Mike Tomlin wanted to say these quarterbacks suck. These quarterbacks they keep bringing me suck. But George Pickens did it a lot, especially last year. Like, he was making, like, subtle jabs. They said something about the pass-catching game, like, you know, red zone wide receiver act play or something like that. He was like, oh, they said that? Okay. Because he was saying all along, like, listen, these dudes are ass. They can't throw me the ball. It's clear to everybody watching that Russ was not getting him the ball. They were not looking to get him in different situations. They couldn't keep Deontay Johnson there. They don't have a good passing game. Arthur Smith is an awful offensive strategist. And he's sitting there like watching film every week, running the same routes. Because I can tell you, Arthur Smith does not switch it up. He does not make in-game adjustments. He does not make week-to-week adjustments. He just runs the same plays and maybe a jump.
He don't even adjust his chair to get comfortable.
Like, he just does not – he is not a good offensive mind. Matt Canada before that was not one either. And then Kenny Pickett still out here playing with two gloves on. It's like, yo, you're on your third team. It's Cleveland. Nut up. Like, you know, you're from Jersey. Like, you can handle this. Take the gloves off. Play football. But that's going to probably cost him his job because I was talking about it before. He probably won't be in Cleveland because they're not going to keep two quarterbacks. So George Pickens will be like, I'm finally with a guy who was, you know, his last healthy season was second MVP voting, constantly over 4,000, you know, 4,000 yards passing, you know, near 40 touchdowns, throws the ball around, throws a good deep ball, likes to throw the ball. They don't have much of a run game. They're probably going to throw it a lot. I mean, Dak's coming off of injury, but he has CD in that George Pickens. I like it. I don't know where it puts him in the NFC East. You know, you always got to worry about continuity. But I think it's just one of those situations where the marriage needed to end. And I think both people – I don't know what Pittsburgh's going to do because I think the move – like I said, I think they made a move too late. But what having DK in the building – it's like, okay, we can afford giving up. I personally would have thought – I would have liked them to work it out just because to have that dual-headed threat of 2 6-foot-5 guys running routes.
See, I mean it's your classic high-risk, high-reward, right? You know, can he come there and have the ability to blow up your locker room? Maybe. You know, is he going to produce? As long as Dak is healthy, he will. So it just depends on – you always talk about, right, tolerance. You know, how much tolerance are you going to have? But when you look at the rest of Dallas's receivers, it's a no-brainer. Jalen Tolbert, Jonathan Mingo, Kevontae Turpin, Paris Campbell, that wasn't going to get you by. So yeah. Now you just spent a third-round pick on a guy that theoretically is one of the top receivers in your division as it already. I mean, he's probably better natural receiver than, say, Debo. You know, maybe he's not better than Terry McLaurin, but just natural receiver, you know, because I think Debo's value is more the other stuff that he adds, like, to the run Debo, game, the blocking.
Debo's toughness to take, you know, 5, 10, 15 yard in breaking routes.
Right.
into the middle of the field, break a couple of tackles, and go for 27 yards. Pickens has the ability to high point the ball. He has the size. You can't play through him if you're a corner, unless you're a guy like, you know, Terry, you know, Woolley in Seattle, who's like 6'3", 6'4". There's not a lot of guys. There's not a lot of guys that can, like, play through his body. So as long as you're getting them good routes, you know, Dak and Dallas are going to throw the ball 40 to 45 times a game.
But
so he's going to get, he should get about 8 to 10 targets.
But on the flip side, it brings me back to, what the hell are Pittsburgh doing? Because you just had an NFL draft, right? Didn't take a receiver. So you drafted Roman Wilson last year, who played maybe a game, maybe two games, you know, but there's not enough intel on him yet to say whether it's going to work out or not. Then you got they went and got Robert Woods. You know, they got Calvin Austin, Scotty Miller.
They still have Mason Rudolph as their starting quarterback.
Maybe. I think Will Howard is going to be the starter.
But I'm saying it, but as far as like anyone with NFL starting experience, it's Mason Rudolph in an anemic offensive set. Like, I'm telling you, I love Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh, but they showed up to help you move in a Civic. I was like, dog, I get that we can put some stuff in here. We can go back and forth. I can put my clothes in here. I can make something happen with this, but right. I need a truck. I asked you because you have a truck at home. Like, oh, no, I'm not bringing the truck. I'm just going to bring the Civic. That's what the Steelers are doing right now. Is like, you just think you're going to create this bad field position, create turnovers, and just – you're going to run it with Mason Rudolph, and he's going to teach Will Howard, or he's going to get Aaron Rodgers in. Aaron Rodgers is going to want weapons that he is either familiar with.
Well, yeah, there's been talks that Lazard
might be on his way. Body types that he likes.
Yeah, there's talks that Lazard might be on his way to Pittsburgh. So if he does, you know what that means. But you know,
he's going to be just throwing incomplete passes to him.
You know, but when I look back at it, it's like you look at that division, right? And because like you said, you don't know where the Cowboys stack up in the East or whatever. That's going to just depend on how that's
Philly's. Back. It's Philly's division. Division. Yeah.
But when you look at it, so you got the Ravens, right? They're solidified right on the doorstep of trying to get to the Super Bowl. You know, you got Cincinnati, who doesn't have a defense, but you can't.
Their rookie hasn't signed this contract either, so he's holding out a mini camp. Two of
them, and you know, but you can't outscore them, and you know what I mean. You got your own issues with T.J. Watt right now. You know, then you got Cleveland, who you should be better than, but Cleveland should at least be decent on defense, you know, at the very least, while they groom one of these quarterbacks to come along. They went and got, you know, two running backs. So, you know, Cleveland's trying to figure it out. So you went out and got Caleb Johnson from Iowa. So I guess that means that you're going to go back to the traditional 1980s Steelers football, punch you in the mouth and all that kind of stuff. Problem is the NFL has changed. So you can still have that type of running back, but I don't know if how successful you can be as far as like getting deep into the season without scoring, say 27 every so often.
You're gonna need the threat of a passing game, not just a deep threat. You're gonna need like a 130 in the left first half. We're on the 20-yard line. We need to drive the ball down the field. You need to be able to make those kind of plays. You can't just be like, let's see if we can pop this draw play because we're a running team. Like, no, you're gonna need to be able to sit back there, call two or three plays at once, hurry up offense through the passing game. The NFL has done that, but you can still ground and pound. You just have to do it either by committee, because you can't just have one guy, you know, taking 30,
right,
getting hit on 30 different run plays.
Well, they went out and got Gainwell from Philly as well.
Kind of undersized, and they're not paying a lot either. Guess,
you know, and then they still got Jalen Warren. So
another,
you know,
small guy.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's offense looks like
nobody won't say it.
Like the guy who put his fantasy football team on auto draft, And it's like, yeah, it's a lot of good, solid players, but you probably could have used a guy like Kittle in this spot, but instead you have this reliable running back that constantly gets, you know, 4.1 yards a carry. But that's not going to matter if you it's, you know, third and two and you want to pass it just because you're like, you know, we ran it twice. Now it's third and two. Let's see if we can pop this quick screen pass. And you don't have the horses to execute that kind of play. And now you're punting anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as the Dallas side of it, like I said, I feel like it's something they had to do. I don't know what other receivers are really out there on the block right now, but this is something that they had to do because now you're getting into that part of Dak's career where, not saying that he's near the end of it or anything, but I don't know how many top shelf. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I just don't know how many top shelf years, because he's had some injuries too. You know what I'm saying? So
his injuries have been leg stuff. Like, not he'll be
32.
This hamstring off the bone. This hamstring off the bone thing is like, I don't know. Like I said, fortunately, because I've never been swift of foot, I've never pulled a hamstring, but I can only imagine that pulling that shit off the bone, I mean, doesn't feel like great. And I don't know how long the rehab was. Then he had the ankle. He was in the walking boot last year. And then the year he signed his original first big contract, he had the broken ankle. So he does have like a lot of lower extremities injuries. But he's not much of a runner.
Before the season starts.
Yeah. I mean, he tore his hamstring in the pocket, and it seemed to be just very strange way to get injured because he hurt on the pass where no one hit him.
Mm-hmm.
Like he planted, I think, because it was against Atlanta. And I remember when the ball came, it came out like a duck. Like no one got to
work, I guess. But
yeah, because he's doing those little hip things at the beginning of the game. You think that would clear it up? But I think Dak would be fine. Like I said, I think Pickens would be fine. They got to get a running game. I don't know. I think Nick Chubb still might be a free agent.
He is.
Maybe Jerry makes that call or, you know, gets him checked out. But I just some of these teams, their move just kind of baffled me. And once again, I don't know who they have in the building. I don't know who they have on the practice squad, who they feel like, you know what, this guy's ready to move into the main roster. Because all we get is like the cliff notes. Like this rookie mini camp. I'm like, how many players do you have to be able to run a rookie mini camp? Well, maybe they're bringing in practice squad guys or just bringing in tryout guys. Well, so the NFL teams that know what they're doing, they know what they're doing. But as far as like us helicopter kind of looking over it, I'm not sure what Pittsburgh is doing.
Don't forget, I mean, they did draft Jaden Blue as well. So, you know, they got that going for them. Speedster coming in, you know, they went and got Javonte Williams from the Broncos. And I guess you just hope he can come. Like last year was the year after the injury. Maybe he gets better.
Maybe he's fully comfortable with it now.
Yeah, so yeah. So like, you know, so I mean, they have talent. They always
like
do.
KD after the Achilles.
Mm-hmm. They got that corner that I liked out of East Carolina, Revelle. So you know what I mean? Like, they're not hurting for talent. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, can y'all play together? You know,
yeah. The guy pulling the trigger from under center is, like I said, I'm a big advocate for winning in the trenches, but you also need a guy who can stand in there and look down the barrel of the gun and fire the ball. I'm not sure if Mason Rudolph is that guy.
No, and Skylar Williams ain't either. You know? Correct. Or Skylar Thompson. There you go, Skylar Thompson.
Yeah.
So, you know, then, you know, before we get out of here, you know, we just wanted to talk because, you know, Mr. Logical was out here getting rowdy earlier before we started talking about.
Shout out to Q. Because I can get Q going on the boxing conversation because he likes boxing. That's the thing.
I love boxing. It just ain't. It's just not good anymore. Like, you know, I went through this phase where, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan and whatever. I believe in Joe Hendry, but you know, but like there was about a 5-6 year period that even I had to turn it off because it was so bad. You know what I mean? And I think that boxing is such a niche sport that once you develop a certain love for it, you just ride with it. You know what I mean? You know, whereas us, like I made the comment earlier when you were talking to Q that I wasn't a casual until boxing became casual.
Yeah. I was talking to my middle son the other day. We went to the movies, went to see Thunderbolts/The New Avengers. And on the way back, I was talking about
spoilers.
I was talking about how, you know, how certain people become famous, because we're talking about people in movies, actors in movies. And I was saying, like, because we were talking about people getting canceled. And I was like, when I grew up, what people were doing to get them famous on TV, we couldn't dream of. Like a regular person like myself, I never thought to myself that at one point in my life, I'm going to be able to box like Mike Tyson. Uh-huh. It's just not something you thought, because Mike Tyson was just this, you know, they talk about aura. He just had this thing and he was just knocking people out. And boxing rolled those kind of ways. And it was just like, it was crazy. It was rumors he had like $300 million. We don't know if it's true or not. But because he was boxing, he was out there fighting and he was putting on a show. He was fighting in Atlantic City. He was fighting in Vegas. He was fighting anywhere you can get a fight. These guys now have so much money available to them, they don't want to fight. Last week, they had a card with like all the popular names that we know. Like, I'm gonna consider myself an old school boxing fan when I was younger. HBO, I had HBO in my room. We used to watch the fights all the time. Roy Jones Jr. is probably one of my favorite fighters ever when I was growing up. And my cousin used to box. We used to box all the time. We'd get one glove each and just go to town. So that's how I learned how, you know, get my hand game together. So I was really into it. I was really enjoying it. Last week you had Haney, Ryan Garcia, Romelo, Canelo, Bud Crawford in the audience, Mike Tyson in the audience, Serafimo. It was in Times Square, like outside, a couple of blocks away from Broadway, where literally they actually put on shows. They had this great format to put on a memorable show. Because you were asking, like, oh, it's in Times Square. Like, is it at Madison Square Garden? I'm like, it says Times Square. I'm like, they're not fighting outside. And when they set it up and I saw it was outside, I'm like, this is dope. Exclusive fans, but you can now you have to blast it to every house. Not pay-per-view, right. But just find a way. Some streaming app, ESPN, somebody. I don't know what service they put it on so people could watch it. You're not in an arena. So you had all these names, all the social media names, all these boxers. Haney ran around forever. Melo hit Garcia with a couple of left hooks. Instinctively, Garcia should have got him like, you know what? This a brawl now. At least for the rest of this round, we going to brawl. I'll get back to boxing the next round. But we going to fight. You put me on my ass in front of all these people in Times Square, the most popular city in the world. He's going to put me in my ass in the middle of Manhattan. Now we fighting for the next couple of minutes. And it doesn't happen. And he was saying it was a lot of good fights. I'm like, yeah, but the good names, the popular names, have to put on the good fight for me to want to see the other guys who should be on undercards.
Right. And that's why, like I was saying, when I watched the Canelo fight the day after, it was one of those fights where it was like y'all just fighting because somebody signed a contract. Somebody offered some money and you just took it, because this guy was an undefeated champion. He had only had 23 fights and it was just dumb. Like Canelo would come through, tag him twice to the body. He'd throw one punch back and then run around the ring like, yeah. And then like go to the corner after the ring, dancing and strutting. And it's like, bro, you might've thrown 100 punches in this whole fight.
Wow, the Devin Haney fight had the least amount of punches per copy box numbers of any fight.
So I don't understand why people watch it besides names.
And the names don't deliver. Like we talked about the Saudi Arabian money that's been kind of funneled into boxing. We got Anthony Joshua fighting Francis Ngannou before we got Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder.
Mm-hmm. And we wanted Tyson that fight Fury. For as long as we wanted Floyd and Pacquiao.
I remember talking about that fight late 2017, maybe early 2018. And Deontay fought Tyson Fury, I believe the end of 2018. I think that was the first one. So then they had their, you know, their trilogy, which was dope. But we knew after the second one that Deontay Wilder wasn't that great of a boxer. And Tyson Fury, he blamed it on the suit and everything else. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of faded. these guys are all in the social media limelight of boxing, but they're not fighting the big fights. And I get if you have health reasons, if it's like, hey, I fought for too many years, I'm taking too many headshots, I don't want to do like it anymore. Saying, I understand it, but don't get on Twitter saying I beat that ass instead of like, just book the fight.
Well, like Q was saying, that's where the politics come in, because you know, you got your top ranks, your PBC, all this kind of stuff, and you got to get those people on the same page. And then you got to get somebody, I guess, that's willing to take the lesser of the purse. You know, because you remember that old thing back in the day, Bernard Hopkins and Roy Jones, like 60-40,
beat your ass. Yes, yeah, 60-40, like, you know what I mean? Beat your ass.
Yeah, it was just one of those things. Like,
but that's because all the money they were getting was from that. They weren't on Wheaties boxes. George Foreman had, like, he was an American icon,
right?
But
these guys
weren't getting shoe deals and
Prime Gatorade,
and all these different brands giving them the money that they're getting now. The money that is, I think, Jake Paul, who became the biggest name in boxing while everybody else was just kind of like tweeting at each other. He had his own drink company. His brother's got a drink company. I think Celsius is the one that sponsored his fights. So he's getting all kinds of sponsors. I don't know how much money that is, but at least it's a lot of sponsors.
60-year-old men.
On Netflix. Netflix is in probably every home in America or every cell phone or iPad around the world. And he's getting paid to fight on these platforms. But yet, a guy like Tank Davis will tweet at Shakur, tweet at Devin Haney, tweet at Ryan Garcia, and says, it's been like, yo, let's just make this fight and make some money.
Right. And that's why, like, you know, we were talking about the lack of advertising, you know, because I was talking about how, you know, Tank Davis, whenever I watch his fights, and it's not just because I'm from Baltimore, but when I'm watching his fights, the announcers are always talking about, this is the face of boxing. This is the face of boxing. He's the guy. So, you know, the last couple of times we saw him, he was hurting people. You know, he put Ryan Garcia down. You know, he put I forgot the other guy's name, the dark-skinned guy. I forgot his name. But he put him down. And then, you know, you come back and you're fighting Lamont Roach. And the announcers were talking about how, you know, because Lamont Roach is from D.C., Tank from Baltimore, they had that. They sparred, they knew each other, so it was almost reminiscent of Roy Jones and Antonio Tarver. So yeah, they went the distance, just like Roy Jones and Tarver did the first time they fought. You would think that would have been everywhere, like, you know what I mean? It was all over the internet as far as Twitter and all that, but yeah, but boxing isn't talked about enough in mainstream sports for it to flow that way. So they're going to fight June 21st. I found that out tonight because Q said they're fighting my birthday weekend. That's the only reason on his birthday. That's the only reason I knew that.
The boxing has an easy formula that other sports would love to recreate. Philly playing against Kansas City in the Super Bowl for Kansas City potentially the three-peat, and the team that Kansas City beat to initially start the three-peat run, now they match up in the Super Bowl. You can't make those things happen in other sports. I can make Garcia Tank rematch happen.
Couldn't get Kobe LeBron.
But it's like, they will literally have, you ever try to make lunch plans with someone at work? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yo, maybe with the lunch last week, that was cool. You want to do it again? Yeah. And it's like, hey, you want Chinese? Like, nah, I don't want any Chinese. Hey, man, let's go get this barbecue. I don't want barbecue. All right, we're not going to lunch. That's how these guys treat these potential trilogy kind of matchups. If you lose the first one, it shouldn't be anything stopping you from wanting to get the rematch. Because the rematch is where the betting money comes in. The rematch gives you a situation where maybe the guy who won the first time gets a little lax, gets more interviews, maybe eats a little longer.
To fight somebody and then try to invoke his rematch clause with Crawford.
Yeah, but then it never happens. Like I said, it'll be over something simple. Like, yo, nobody can wear silver gloves. Oh, I'm out. And it's like, yo, you're taken away because you already have one fight with the result and you can just pump that. You can promote that. You're like, oh, he already knocked them out once. And then the guy who got knocked out, now he comes back and says, we won't do it again. We'll see what happens on May 12th. Yada, 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 yada. And they just keep doing that. And it's like the fight. Now you got a trilogy. Now you have a real fight.
Could you imagine if we never got Tyson Holyfield, or if we never got Sugar Ray and Tommy the Hitman Hearns, or Marvin Hagler just because of some kind of dispute over the money? Or those guys were fighting 3-4 times a year sometimes too.
Yeah, you know, Riddick Bowes, like some of these guys became like legends. Riddick Bowe, remember Andrew Galata, which like kept hitting dudes in the nuts, but dudes would still take the fight. Like I said, but and we know we have learned that it does take a toll on the body, a greater toll than, you know, was previously respected. I think now it's respected. But I'm not saying you got to stop. You got to fight through your health. But don't fight Ryan Garcia, Tank. Knock him out with a liver shot. Something I don't think I've ever seen before. Maybe Trinidad caught De La Hoya.
No, I think that was Bernard.
That caught De La Hoya with that?
Yeah. Because after it happened, he was doing the post-fight, and they were like, did you know you won with that punch? And he was like, yeah, as soon as I hit him, I just heard him go,
yeah. So, like, it doesn't happen often. So now, instead of fighting this other fight, just get that one. If you told your family, listen, I'm only fighting 40 fights, and you're on fight 32, get the trilogy with the guy that you could build your legacy off of. And then at 40, be like, yo, I'm done. I said I'm fighting 40 fights. It's a wrap. I got to worry about my health. But don't waste. I won't say waste. Don't just go into two random fights that nobody watches. And then now we got 2 years in between. Because Tank Davis and Garcia, if I had to guess, what was that, 2023 maybe?
Probably.
Maybe like mid-2023, Haney-Garcia was probably early 2024. You know, and we're not getting a rematch of either one of those fights.
And they were on the same card.
The three most popular guys, we're not getting a rematch from any one of those combinations.
And then where does Teofimo fit into all this? You know, where's Lomachenko? You know, because I thought he beat Devin Haney.
Yeah, I remember you telling me like you thought that he won that fight.
Yeah, but they were trying to pump him. There was rumors that he was going to fight Tank, and then just. But why didn't we get a Lomachenko Haney rematch?
Because.
Is it just because Loma's name isn't what it was? Because I know he's older now.
That's the thing with the rematch. The rematch sells itself because it puts you in a position to where, if you are really that much better than the guy you just beat, and you beat him again, now all the buildup of him saying, I'm going to win this rematch, blah, 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 then you beat him again. Now you have that extra oomph. Like, yo, I beat you twice. Now I'm going on to my next guy. And now the next guy who felt like Lomachenko was saying, like, yo, I'm going to beat him. Like, yo, you couldn't even beat Haney. Watch me take Haney out. Now Tank's like, all right, bet. Let's make this happen. And whoever wins that, you set up the rematch off of that. It's a very simple formula.
Well, that's what we were talking about, right? Like having these double main event type cards where, like, you know, you might have Tank and Haney fight. Then maybe you got Garcia and, I don't know.
Lopez.
Yeah, Lopez, whoever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then the winners.
Some other name, yeah.
It's like a little mini tournament. Then you can have the winners fight for the title, whatever, you know, but boxing, like, I just don't know why, because I think the Saudi money is so big, because I see UFC commercials, you know, I hear, and granted, UFC is just one, like Q was saying, it's just one person that is the promoter.
Call the shots.
Yeah, so he makes all the fight. You don't got a choice, you know what I mean? And he'll strip you of your title. Whereas a lot of these guys, sometimes they'll lose their titles, like, hey, this is your mandatory challenger. If you don't fight him within X amount of time, I strip you of the title. Dudes be like, whatever, I got another title.
Whatever. I'll go to the WBO. Title
right now. You can have one.
Or the WNBA, IA, whatever, what the hell, other boxing organization out there is going to give you a belt.
WBA, WBC.
But like I said, that event in Times Square, I'm not sure how much of Times Square they took up to have that. But watch it. I guarantee you. Dana White is sitting around with his people, what brainstorming, like, where could we do a fight that's bigger than that Times Square debacle that the boxing people just put on. And who, right. like, where can I do it? Can we do it in? I don't think you want to do it anywhere too warm.
Maybe like Chicago or something.
Like somewhere was like a, maybe, I don't know if you legally can do it in the middle of Central Park because it's a public park. You probably can't put like, but like somewhere where there's like normally like a big outdoor festival. That's like a, you know, Joshua Tree or whatever, some crazy shit like that. And you put on a real big UFC fight. I think he'll do it, and I think he'll put
on at Disneyland.
he'll bring guys in that were suspended for PEDs. They're like, listen, we're gonna waive you. We're just gonna test you every single week. Don't fuck this up, because I need John Jones to fight this guy. I need the baddest British guy to fight. I need the baddest guy from Brazil. I need the Japanese guy. I need the women from Mexico. I need all of these people to come here so we can show boxing how to put on. Once-in-a-lifetime kind of event.
I had that shit somewhere near Disney. Have the little ring girls walking around with the Minnie Mouse outfits on and like Daisy Duck or something.
But like something like maybe under the arch in St. Louis.
Yeah,
something. Just something with like a dope American backdrop or a dope European backdrop. Maybe in the middle of the street at a...
Fucking, like fight somewhere with Niagara Falls in the background.
Niagara Falls. Hell, do it in front of Buckingham Palace. Just have every mic, because it's a big traffic circle right in front of Big Ben. I don't know how much weight you can put on the bridge, but if you can shut it down for a night.
You know what I'm saying? But that's why I think UFC, I gotta look at the numbers, but I feel like UFC is at a point where it might have passed boxing on the hierarchy of sports that we care about, you know. Because boxing, I think it just depends on who's fighting. Like, oh, Canelo's fighting? Sign me up. Or, you know, whatever. But I think UFC, like, you just watch people fight because you know that...
You're going to get a fight.
You're going to get a fight. Like, you know what I mean?
Those guys are barely getting paid, so they're going to do it. But
right. And even with a dude like... what was my man name from Uzbekistan or whatever? Habib. Yeah, like even though he was like wrestling and doing all that stuff, you know what I'm saying? It was still entertaining. Like if you had the right opponent, like when he fought Conor McGregor and all that.
Yeah, Conor McGregor was the personality, and Khabib was this wall of a human being that you couldn't take down.
Yeah,
and
whereas when
he
in beat boxing,
him, he let his emotions out. Yeah,
whereas in boxing,
and they threw ladders and shit at the bus.
Yeah,
like Conor McGregor flew in some goons from Ireland to attack the bus at an event. It was like crazy beef. It was like real shit. Like he, you know, got charged with a crime. I think he had community service over it.
You know, whereas in boxing, you know, Floyd Mayweather, I guess, gave everybody the template of this is how you sell the fight or this is what you do. And then the HBO shows, the 24/7 and all that kind of stuff. But now it's like to the point where when you're watching this stuff, they just trying too hard. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you don't even got the personality to do what you're doing. You just cussing a lot.
They should all watch how Adrian Broner was a really good boxer. And he tried to manifest his own Floyd Mayweather type personality. And it was like, I think your personality was already kind of over the top. But it felt like he was forcing.
Right.
Forcing like instead he like even when he was talking shit, it just was like mumbles because it's like, yo, you don't naturally feel this way. You could just say how I'm gonna beat his ass. But he was like, I'm gonna take your mama, I'm gonna beat you, I'm knock this boy out in the fourth round. Like it just was like unnecessarily
bolstered,
like too brash. And so then when he lost, it was like
that's the right word.
Yeah, it just bloviating.
Yeah, just like I loved Angel Garcia, Danny Garcia's daddy, you know.
I cut my head off.
Yeah, like you know what I'm saying? Like Danny Garcia, like at one point, like I'm a Josh Hart stan. At one point, I was a Danny Garcia stan. Like I just knew he was going to be one of the best boxers. You know what I mean? But it was like I was just caught up in his dad, though.
It's a Philly guy. Certain regions just produce boxers. Philly's
yeah, and I was cheering for him just off of the strength of his dad. Like, you know what I mean? And like, yo, if you lose to this bum, I'm going to kill myself. Like, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it was like, but I believed him though. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
cause I cut my own head off.
You know, whereas a lot of these dudes are just like, they just talking, just like, where's one time at?
Who's that?
Keith Thurman. Where he at? You know what I'm saying?
Is that boxing, it's a fickle beast. John, like with the UFC, I know like the boxing and the UFC comparisons. The UFC had one of the main events in Brazil, and everybody on the undercard fought a fighter from Brazil. Mm-hmm. So that got the Brazil crowd into it. Did the same thing in Japan. I imagine if he hasn't done it, he could probably do the same thing in England. I know they have a big, and well, at least in the UK, they have a big MMA community there.
Yeah.
So
it's real though. It's real. Like, you know what I mean? And you know,
and that's the thing. Yeah. You gotta want to make the fight. You gotta want to make the fight. And I believe this current wave of this current generation. It's like, look back to Pernell Whitaker, look back to, you know, Melvin Taylor's, look back to Julius Cesar Chavez. Look at those fights. Look at the spectacle those guys put on. Mm-hmm. Granted, yes, you cannot do it for 50 or 60 fights and, you know, not be at a risk, but you're already boxing. Get your big trilogy out there. Get your legacy trilogy in there. Mm-hmm. Get a good fight. And then, you know, stay off of Twitter. Because I don't believe you when you're tweeting at a guy that you can actually set up a fight with. Like, why are you texting? Why are y'all sending poems back and forth and memes? Like, just set up a fight, agree to the money, agree to the location.
Bud's about to fight Canelo. You know what I'm saying? Probably.
And they had an agreement before, then it changed, right? They're supposed to fight last year.
Right.
And what made it change? Because Canelo kept fighting.
I don't know.
It wasn't like he stopped fighting. Well,
I think Canelo was the one that stopped away because Jake Paul started calling him out. But then it made me think, like, is Bud ever going to fight Boots Ennis? You know what I mean? Like, Boots Ennis is probably the dude that, like, a dude that would give him a lot of problems. He's on the youthful side of it. So maybe Bud could, like, have the veteran savvy and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, but Boots is the one that could put paws on him and actually hurt him. And I think Bud, to some degree,
they need to get Boots with another guy on the undercard of the Canelo Crawford fight.
Right.
That way, at the end of that fight,
you know,
whoever wins, you can have the face to face hallway stare off post fight thing, whatever, and create buzz for the next fight.
You know what it is? It's college football. You know what I mean? Like, all these years, like, you're like, hey, how come FSU doesn't play UCF more? And it's like, because they don't want UCF to encroach on that territory. Like, yeah. 9 out of 10, Florida State should beat UCF.
But UCF has a couple of good recruiting classes, and FSU has a year like they had last year. Now it's guys in the Tampa area like, yo, maybe, Mom, we should take that trip down to UCF and not, you know, maybe we'll go to Florida State.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But you're the legacy. You're the blue blood. You know, you'll beat them way more than they beat you. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know,
and you'll bounce back. And that's the thing about you. You'll bounce back if you take the next biggest fight available, you will bounce back. People will forget that Ryan Garcia got beat by Romelo if he takes on Tank next and wins.
Yeah. Or if he beats Devin Haney straight up again. You know what I mean? Or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? And that's the other problem, right? And then this would be the last thing. Like, it's just like when we watch sports, right? Like Jalen Brunson or whoever, Trae Young, whatever player, right? They come out slow and everybody's like, oh, he's overrated. Then they go off in the fourth quarter and it's like, you don't hear from those people anymore. And so when you're watching boxing or whatever, it's like, okay, if I am Bud Crawford or Floyd Mayweather or whoever it might be, I think I could beat everybody.
Correct.
But all it takes is one punch. So I'm going to try to avoid the dude that has that punch.
One punch power.
As long as I can. You know what I mean? So then, because if you lose that fight, no matter who you beat, no matter how great you've been, people are going to say overrated. See, he got in there with a real fighter, and look what, and they don't want to deal with that.
And I guess I see that that happened to Deontay Wilder because he got pretty much dominated in his fights with
Tyson Fury.
Tyson Fury, but he did make a comeback, and he knocked him out fighting. Basically. Yeah, he, you know, he hit him with. I was watching it. I was in Cali, and I was just watching on somebody's laptop. They just were sitting at the bar, and I was like, I forgot about this fight. And I think I started watching it in the 12th round, maybe like a minute before that hit happened. I thought Tyson Fury was done. I'm like, damn.
He was done. That was a slow count.
Man, he popped up like the Undertaker at 6, though. So even though, like, even for the slow count, he still popped straight up, eyes wide open. I'm like, that's strange. That's like a strange thing to see. So I'm glad we got the rematch. I'm upset that Wilder came out and all that stuff that, you know, he said felt tired him out, took his legs away. Because that took away from the Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury, like that whole, like those three guys.
That would never even
could have given us. They could have.
That one happened, did it?
It didn't happen either.
It didn't happen.
He ended up fighting.
Then by the time we got Fury and Usyk, it was like he was on his last legs.
He's on his last legs, and then Joshua got beat by the guy. I think it's David Boudoir or something like that. Is a British guy. Black guy, I think has a French last name,
right?
David Du Bois or something like that. So when he got, So I think he knocked Anthony Joshua out, which took the wind out of any sales that was going to build up this Wilder fight. But I'm like, we're already 7 years behind it.
Well, that's who Usyk is about to fight now. He's about to fight Du Bois in July.
Yeah, but they're not American, so it doesn't get promoted here. So it's a lot of holes in the fabric of boxing that they could fill if they just went back and just looked at the negotiation tactics and style and matchup designs and card builds of the 80s and 90s. If you just look at how they did it, granted, yeah, guys shouldn't be fighting 3-4 times a year, but just simply, if you're going to build two big cards a year, you want to do a Cinco de Mayo for sure. And you got to have another one by November. Because you're in the middle of football season. It's kind of early on. College football is starting to wrap up. You got to get the big card in the beginning of summer. So around this time, because Floyd Mayweather used to fight on Cinco de Mayo. Mm-hmm. So it's getting warm pretty much all over the states. People are coming out. People coming out of their winter shells through the spring, the allergies. Boom. Give them the big fight card with 8 really good fights. Make the money work. That way you can sell every rematch after that. But yeah.
Jeez,
but
okay.
Just me here, my organizational management brain just going to waste trying to help these hypothetical situations that if I was in the boardroom, they'd be like, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. I'm like, bet, give me 5%.
Right. And so before we get out of here, I just want to let everybody know OKC 56, Denver 51 at halftime. So, you know, Chet came out strong with 11 in the first quarter. He's got 16 and 7 at the half. You know, the guy that I've been looking for, you know, I put him on the milk carton. You know, Michael Porter Jr. with 15 at the half. Jamal Murray with 21. Jokic with 8 and 9, but only 1 assist, 2 of 9 from the floor. SGA, only 2 of 8 from the floor. So, we got us a game in that 52-80. Yeah. So, you know, but we will be back on Tuesday, you know what I'm saying, with some more NBA playoffs, some more stuff here and there. I might got some college football on my mind because, you know, it's almost time for let's do some preseason previews. You know, it's almost time for NCAA 26 to drop. I'm here for it.
Absolutely. You know?
And Mr. Logical and I are both here for you. So like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things with a liquid death in hand. We love you. And all we ask, fact fight.
Bring feelings to the fact fight, baby.
No feelings. We love you. Peace.